Session number 9427, Mr. Albert Charlesworth, part one.
Where were you born, Mr. Charlesworth?
At a little village up in the Pennines called Delph.
Which year was this?
1915.
What did your father do for a living?
He was in the army at the time. He was killed later on in the First World War.
Was he a regular?
No, he was, like many in those days, I suppose, just in for the duration, as they said.
What was his employment when he was not in the army?
Well, I can't really tell you that. I was only a tiny little infant at the time. I wouldn't know, really.
How old were you when you left school?
15 and a half.
To do what?
I went into an engineering factory at Dubcross.
How did you come to be interested in politics?
Well, I suppose it came down from my mother, really. She was a Labour supporter. Used to attend dances and the like, and functions at the Labour Club, tea, supper pies, potato pie suppers, things like that, and she used to take us with her, and I suppose it developed from that.
Did you do much reading about politics?
Not really a lot. Other than what was in the papers of the day, that's all. I wasn't what you call a real political animal, although I was politically minded. I wasn't really politically active.
Would you say you were class conscious?
It's difficult to say, because living in a little village, everybody knew everyone else, and, you know, there wasn't much differentiation, really. So it is difficult to say whether there's any class consciousness there or not. I don't think there is today, because, well, there isn't the same class distinction today as there was then. Although, as I said, living in a village, it didn't show up so much.
Were they all Labour supporters in the village, or did you have Conservatives in the
village? Oh, there were Conservatives and Liberals. Mm. There was a Labour club, a Liberal club, and a Conservative club. At that particular time, I'm going back to the early days now, Philip Snowden was the MP, so it's fairly obvious it was a Labour stronghold at that time.
Did you join any political organisation yourself?
Other than the Labour Party, that's all. I was a member of the Labour Club. I wasn't a member of the Labour Party as such. I was a member of the Labour Club, which was affiliated to the Labour Party.
The Labour Club was a social club, was it?
Well, it wasn't so much a social club. All it consisted of was a reading room, a small reading room the size of this, and upstairs was a billiard table. That's about all there was to it, so it wasn't what you call a social club, really. It was just where Labour supporters gathered during the day to read the papers or have a game of snooker or a chat or whatever you like. Same at evening time, come to that. And occasionally, as I said, they had these potato pie suppers and things like that, and my mother used to take us to them. Of course, as I got older, I used to go to the club of an evening time and have a game of snooker and chat with the others. Then the war started in Spain, and I was interested in that right from the very start for some reason or other. I only had access to the ordinary news in the in the daily papers, Daily Herald it was at that time that they took in the club. And I got a map and put it up on the wall in the snooker room, and I used to chart each day's events, you know, the progress of the war, with pins and a piece of string on the map. And they used to talk, several of the members, the older members especially, used to talk to me a lot about it. And I read and tried to interpret what I could from the newspapers of what was really happening there, and I came to be the acknowledged expert in the club, as you might say, on what was happening in Spain.
Why do you think you took such an interest in Spain?
I don't really know. It just something that happened, you know. I don't really know.
Were you indignant when Franco's call occurred?
Yes, I was. That is probably the reason, was the way it was all carried out. So, hush, hush, as you might say, and then it was suddenly sprung on the Spanish people. You know, it was there, it had happened. And right from the very start, it was obvious that outside forces were at work rather than the Spanish people, because, I mean, Franco had got Moors waiting to go in and Italians, just waiting for the day. And it wasn't long, of course, before the German took the Condor Legion in as well. And there were a few at that time. I'm talking about the summer of late summer of 1936 now. There were a few people of different nationalities went onto the Republican side to fight on their side, but there were few. There were very few up to then, until beginning of 1937, I would think it was, when the International Brigades was formed, and there was getting quite a number of people there then, but they weren't fighting. They were assembled at different villages in the vicinity of Albacete, being formed into battalions and brigades. And they didn't have any arms anyway. I mean, I was with the British battalion at a village called Madrigueras. And in January and February, early February anyway, no rifles. We had uniform, nice uniforms too, all new, but with no rifles. We did get two Lewis guns, but there was no ammunition for them. So they used to, different groups used to train with these Lewis guns without ammunition. Then we did get rifles, but no ammunition for the rifles. And in early February, of course, we were moved off out of the villages up to Chinchon.
Before we go any further, if we can go back to Lancashire, had there been much black shirt activity in that area?
Oh, yeah.
What did it consist of?
Well, it was the usual thing where Oswald Mosley used to come to Oldham occasionally, and it's a well-known thing that wherever he went, there was anti-fascists gathered, and usually skirmishes developed. I mean, that happened in Oldham just the same as it did in, you know, anywhere else.
Were you ever present at any of these meetings?
A couple of them. Well, they never got to meetings, actually. It was as they do now. They just parade through the streets with the Union Jacks, and that's it. There's a skirmishing starts, and there's no meeting. It's pretty well the same as it is. It's died down now, but I mean, a couple of years back, it was the same thing here, wasn't it? You get these people with their parading through the streets with all the banners and everything, and you get the anti-fascists gathering against them, and that's it. Away you go.
So you went to a couple of them,
yeah.
Parades, did you?
I went to when Mosley held a couple of. He was going to all meetings, but of course, as I say, they parade through the streets to the hall or wherever it is held in the meeting. And in those days, it usually happened the same way. The anti-fascists gathered and brought the thing up before they could even hold a meeting.
Did you go just out of curiosity, or with the specific intention of breaking it up?
Well, not with the specific intention of breaking it up, but that's the way it always turned out. You didn't set out with that intention, but it starts with shouting at them and things like that, and they'll abuse back, and eventually one thing leads to another, and before you know where you are, the little brawls have started.
Did you go with any friends, or did you go alone?
No, I went on my own. I've always been a more or less a loner person, and I wouldn't want to involve anybody else in it anyway.
How many people did the Black Shirts have on the parades?
Well, it's difficult to say.
Hundreds or thousands?
Oh, there weren't thousands, no. 100, 200, something like that. Not that many, in Oldham especially, and I never went to anywhere else. But there were never what you call a real lot.
Were they local people or people brought in from the outside?
Couldn't really tell you because I'm not... although I come from so close to Oldham, I'm not what you call an Oldhamer. So I didn't know anyone in Oldham, as you might say. So I can't really tell you.
Did you know anybody who was a Black Shirt supporter or a Black Shirt himself?
No.
When the fighting broke out, can you describe what happened?
Well, as I've said, it just, you know, it starts with shouting and hurling abuse at each other and perhaps a brick or two's thrown, something like that, and little brawl start, and then the police move in and it's, you know, it's over. It's finished with, that's it.
How quickly did it all happen?
Oh, 20 minutes. 20 minutes to half an hour and it was all finished.
How did the police behave?
Well, they weren't brutal or anything like that. They just, wherever there was a brawl, they moved in and that was it. I can't ever remember anyone being arrested.
Did the police side with one side or the other?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. They just stopped the brawls and that was it.
Did you engage in any other kind of political activity besides going to these Black Shirt parades?
No, not really. I might have helped with either an election on, I might have helped with distributing leaflets, things like that, or addressing envelopes, you know, usual political, election things. But not really.
What about political discussion meetings?
No. At that time, no. Never.
Did you know anything about Marxism?
Yes, I'd read quite a bit about it. I'd read quite a bit about that. Because I did a little bit of reading, as you might say, and it was usually what you might call a technical nature, rather, you know, it wasn't novels or anything like that. It was something that had to do with life in one shape or form or another, such as political activity or engineering activities or things like that.
Can you remember any specific political books that you read?
Oh, I read quite a number that were published by the Left Boot Club. I don't know what it was called, the Left Boot Club then. I'm almost sure that Ian Mercado ran this club. I'm almost sure that Ian Mercado ran it. And they published no end of books. And I read quite a lot of them. Especially, they published one called, it was about that time, one called The Guilty Men. I think that was one published by them, and I think it dealt with the Chamberlain government more than anything. I'm not sure.
Were you ever unemployed before you went to Spain?
Oh, I had a small, short periods of unemployment, short periods, a week or two here, a week or two there, but nothing significant.
How did you go about recruiting yourself to go to Spain?
Well, I saw a little advert in the... I can't remember whether it was the Manchester Evening Paper or the Oldham Evening Paper, but there was just a little advert. And it just said bluntly, volunteers wanted for Spain. Apply, number 17 Swan Street, Manchester. And I went down to Manchester and applied.
What made you decide to respond to it?
Well, I'd been keeping this map in the and reading all I could, avidly reading all I could about it, and I seemed to get more and more incensed about it. And as soon as I saw this advert, well, that was it. I was off.
Do you know when this would have been?
It was early December, 1936. That's as near as I can say, early December. Well, you know, it had been the first half of December. So it would be early December, yeah.
Who had put the advert in?
Well, It would be the Communist Party in Manchester, I would assume, because the fellow I saw at this address, it was just a bare room up on the top floor of a little back street in Manchester, and all there was in was a bare table and a chair. That's all there was, bare floor, a bare table and a bare chair and a chair, and just this one fella. And I didn't know at the time, but it did transpire later on that his name was George Brown, and he was one of the leading members of the Communist Party in Manchester. He was killed in Spain, by the way. He went out later on himself and was killed at Brunetti.
Had you met any communists before this?
Not knowingly. I might have done, but not knowingly.
What did George Brown say to you?
Well, he just asked me how old I was, one thing or another, you know, any family liabilities or anything like that, and explained what it was all about, you know, what I was going to do. He said, you know, it's not a picnic you're going, you're going to fight. And when I agreed it was okay with me, he just said, well, he says, be such and such a bus station at such and such a time next Monday and you're away. So that's what happened.
Did you have any family commitments?
No, none whatsoever.
Did you tell your mother what you were going to do?
No. She didn't find out until probably the day before I went.
What was her reaction?
Well, she didn't find out from me then. She found out from someone else.
One of your friends? Well,
someone from the Labour Club, I think. I never did know, really, but she wasn't really put out about it. Not really. No, she didn't tell me I hadn't to go or anything like that, so I went.
What did you take with you?
Well, I had a small attaché case with one or two things in. Nothing really, just, you know, a change of clothing and that was all.
Did you take much money?
No. And then it's a other than the coppers, as you might say. Because there wasn't much about in those days.
Did you have a passport?
Yes, I had a passport.
Had you been abroad before?
I'd been to France once.
Who did you meet at the bus station?
Well, there was a group of fellas, be it perhaps 8 or 9. And George Brown was there, of course. He didn't come with us, but he saw us onto the bus and gave us all the tickets and the like to London. The tickets were for London. And as we chatted on the bus, I found out the names of one or two. Well, I can only remember one or two, actually. Albert Parks, he was killed at Brunetti. And Sam Wilde, he became battalion commander eventually. They were in the same party. Can't remember the names of any other who were in the party, but as I said, there were 8 or 9. And when we got to London, we went to King Street, the Communist Party offices in London. And there, we were sent away for a few hours, actually. It was for all the little groups to be accounted for and organised, and when evening came, we were assembled as a larger group, probably 20, 25. And Fred Courtman was put in charge of the group, and we were sent off to Paris from there. I wasn't ever given any money or tickets there. Fred Courtman was in complete charge. He had the money, he had the tickets, he had everything. And some of them had difficulty getting onto the boat because they didn't have passports. But of course in those days, I don't know whether you can now or not, in those days you could get a ticket, a return ticket on the boat to France, and you didn't need a passport for it. And I think a lot of people have been going this way, and it wasn't the boat people so much as the immigration officials, I think, who were getting wise to it and were, you know, checking people. And I had the same problem later on, because after a period of time in Spain, I came home for a few weeks and then went back again. Well, the first time I went, of course, there wasn't a non-intervention pact. So really, there was nothing to stop you from going, really, except that the British government didn't like it at that time. But in France, it was quite all right. We were treated as, well, we were favourably treated in France all the way through. And we went over the frontier into Spain in motor coaches with villagers cheering us on, you know, over the Pyrenees. That was the first time. Now, as I say, after a period of time in Spain, I came home for 6 weeks.
Why was that?
I don't really know. Well, they said it was because I was too young, but there was plenty of people younger than me there. But a lot of people were, not a lot, but, you know, individuals were picked out here and there and sent home. I don't know what it was really. I mean, you weren't forced to go back again or anything like that, but I did go back. Maurice Levine, for instance, he was sent home, and, there was quite a number. But the second time I went back, the non-intervention pact was on then, and I'd lost my passport during my first period in Spain. And I'd come back on a temporary sheet that I'd got from the consulate in Barcelona. Of course, that was only valid for the journey back to Britain. So when I went out again, I didn't have a passport. And I had to pull the old ruse about going to Paris to see some bike racing. And it worked as far as that went. But in France, the situation was totally different. We had to be smuggled here and smuggled there to avoid any contact with the police, the authorities like. And I know the second time we went to a town called Carcassonne. That was to be a jumping off point for the Pyrenees like. And while we were there, we were only there 2 days, and I was out one night with a little group, and we were locked up. We were put in the clink.
Why?
Well, because they knew what we were and where we were going. And we were only in a couple of hours, and then we were released. We were suddenly released without explanation, and we were bundled into a motor coach that was standing outside the police station. And all the other people were in it, who were, you know, out of there, who were going to Spain, and off we went. And, well, I don't really know how far we travelled, but I know by the time we got to where we were going, it was dark, and I didn't know where we were. I don't know. There wasn't a town, there wasn't even a village. They just dumped it out of this motor coach in the dark at the side of the road, and there was a stream running at the side of the road, and I could see the mountains on the other side of the stream, because in the dark you could see the mountains, you know, the blackness of them. And within minutes a guide appeared, and off we went over the mountains into Spain.
Can you recollect the dates?
Not exactly. Not the exact dates.
Or the months?
Well, I know the month well enough. It was January. That was January when I went back the second time. I can tell you the exact date. It'll be in my blue book, in the blue book, like, the exact date when I left Spain to come home and when I went back into Spain.
So when you went into Spain the first time, how far did you get before they sent you back?
Into Spain?
Yes.
Oh, we went in as an organised party. We were going in as an organised group. They knew we were coming. And, you know, we went through the normal channels. Everything was arranged. We went in these motor coaches to a town called Figueres, where there's a Napoleonic fort. And we went to this fort and we were billeted in that.
What were conditions like there?
Well, they weren't bad. I mean, they were totally different to what I'd ever been used to before, because, I mean, they were military conditions. I'd only been used to see what you might call civilian conditions before, and, I mean, it was rude. It was a Napoleonic fort, so the conditions were rudimentary, really. You know, they were primitive. But I didn't complain, because we were getting food, we were getting cigarettes, We were only there a few days anyway, 2 or 3 days, and then we were on the train for Albacete.
Was it clean at Figueres?
Oh, yeah, it was clean, yes, yeah.
So you went down to Albacete. What happened to you there?
Well, there was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds at Albacete, like. It was the gathering place for the international brigades. They hadn't even been formed then, but they were in the process of being formed. And as I said, this Albacete was the gathering place. And we were in a big barracks there. That was dirty. That was a filthy place. And there was all nationalities. And I remember we used to march out to the bullring every meal time to get a meal in the bullring. It was always this done. It was always the same. More breakfast, you'd have coffee and a piece of bread. And then dinner time and what we call tea time here, lentil soup on a chunk of bread and a mug of wine. Then, and it was terrible because this wine, it was just like vinegar to me, because I wonder why I drink it. It was terrible. But you had to put up with it. Anyway, after, it wasn't very long, it was only a matter of days, and all the British were sent to Madrigueras as a British battalion. And there we had our own cookhouse and everything, and we were back onto what you might call, not British food, but British cooking anyway, which made it a bit better.
What happened to you at Madrigueras?
Nothing really. As I say, we were a battalion there, and we'd no rifles. All we used to do was just go long marches every day. Well, not every day, but...